9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org. Listener-sponsored community radio. Like I said, the 8 o'clock buzz will be up after the BBC News. Please stay tuned.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year, and to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th, for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboom Box. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. Hamas says it's launched three rockets at Israel from Gaza. It's the first time Hamas is known to have fired back since Israel launched a new military offensive on Tuesday. Yolande Nell reports from Jerusalem.
Sirens warning of incoming rockets sent Israelis in Tel Aviv rushing to shelters this lunchtime. One missile was intercepted and no one was hurt. Hamas's armed wing said it was responding to the massacre of civilians in Gaza since Israel ended the two-month-old ceasefire. Funerals have been taking place for dozens of people, including many children, who were killed in the latest strikes. The Israeli military says it's hitting what it calls terrorists and terror targets. It's now launched new ground operations along the coast in the far north of the Strip.
President Zelensky of Ukraine is due to address European Union leaders meeting in Brussels to discuss the economic and military challenges facing the continent. He's expected to brief them on his phone call on Wednesday with Donald Trump, who's pushing to end the war caused by Russia's invasion. The EU leaders will discuss supporting Ukraine and taking more responsibility for Europe's own defence. Speaking ahead of the meeting, the Finnish Foreign Minister Elina Valtonen said there were many elements to be discussed about Ukraine.
The security arrangements which we will have to put in place will demand different capabilities, also boots on the ground, but also other capacities. Now, we are not at the stage where Finland would commit any specific item or any specific piece to the puzzle, because we are still together working out what the puzzle will have to look like in the end.
The Turkish authorities say they've detained almost 40 people for making what they called provocative social media posts about the arrest of Istanbul's mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu. Mr. İmamoğlu and dozens of others associated with the opposition face charges including corruption and abetting a terrorist organisation. Emily Wither is in Istanbul.
İmamoğlu, who is being held at the police headquarters here in Istanbul, has shared a message on social media, calling on people not to remain silent in the face of injustice and saying the day has come to speak out. In his post, he urged members of the judiciary to oppose injustice. President Erdogan is very powerful. His government controls the main institutions here, including the judiciary and the majority of the media.
The M23 rebel group has captured a strategic mining town in North Kivu province, further advancing its military offensive in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Security sources said that the Rwanda-backed militants entered Walikale on Wednesday. The town is close to one of the world's largest tin mines. The global mining giant Alpha Min Resources has evacuated its employees and suspended operations. World News from the BBC.
Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bluestem Jazz, presenting Twin Talk at the North Street Cabaret on Friday, March 21st at 8 p.m. Chicago's Twin Talk, featuring saxophonist Dustin Lorenzi, bassist singer Katie Ernst, and drummer Andrew Green, create a style that is elastic, spontaneous, and open. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
I like ice cream and I like cake, and I like you to be my friend, be my friend. And you can be my friend on Monday, March 24th, by listening in to the Access Hour at 7 o'clock, when I'll be playing my original songs and hopefully making you laugh on WORT 89.9 FM. Be my friend.
Good morning. You are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. My name's Tony Castaneda, and it's time for the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz for March 20th, 2025. Eli will not be joining me today, but he'll be back next week. On today's show, I'll be speaking with Angelina Cruz. She is a freshman state representative representing my hometown of Racine, Wisconsin. 62nd Assembly District there. We'll be speaking over there later in the show. And also be speaking with Dave Zirin, who's the sports editor for The Nation magazine. He's also the host of The Edge of Sports broadcast on the Real News Network, amongst other things. Eli's not here. I got nobody to banter with, so I guess I'll just go straight to it. The views and opinions expressed here on WORT Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the WRT Board of Directors, our paid staff, or our millions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only. Speaking of which, I got some music for you as soon as I... get it in here. Little Linton Questy Johnson before we get to Dave Zirin.
Heavy terror on the rampage. Oh, don't you worry, it is so near. Fratricide is only the first phase. Yes, the violence of the oppressor running wild. Them picking up with you, them fissus. How will prophesying a black conquest? And the National Front is on the rampage, making firebombs to burn with. Terrifier, reach with. Such a suffering, we're suffering in this burning age of rage.
It's 8:09, and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Again, we want to thank everybody who pledged your support the last couple of weeks. And if you forgot to do that and weren't around and you want to do it, you can still do it by going online at WORTFM.org and pressing the pledge button. We greatly appreciate it. Dave Zirin is a nationally recognized expert on the intersectionality of sports and politics. And he's appeared on major networks such as ESPN and MSNBC, to name a few. He's an author of over 11 books on this subject and currently the sports editor of The Nation magazine. I was able to catch up with Dave and talk to him in a while yesterday afternoon, and here's that interview. Joining me on the phone is Dave Zirin. Dave is the sports editor for The Nation and commentator on the intersection of sports and politics for The Edge of Sports, amongst other outlets there. Good morning, or good afternoon, or good morning. Hey, Dave, we got it.
Whatever you want to say it is, Tony. I'm happy to be with you.
All right. Well, it seems somewhat frivolous maybe to be talking about athletics and sports while the Trump regime is on full attack on our democratic institutions, and the world, especially in the Middle East, is on fire. What about that? Is it frivolous for us to be kind of talking about the world situation
it's interesting. Yes. It's all about how you talk about sports. I mean, frankly, on one level, there's the basic argument that, you know, that old expression about sports being an opiate for people. But sometimes, you know, drugs are needed to get through incredibly difficult times. And while I am not a user or imbiber, I do understand why, particularly in this climate, somebody might need a break from everything, you know, I mean. And who's to judge what those breaks are? Like, I have certain TV shows, and I watched the movie Predator last night, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, just because I felt like my brain was going to explode with everything that was going on. So if people want to take a break with, say, March Madness coming up, I get it. I understand it. I'm not going to judge. But what I am going to more likely to judge is if you're not doing anything when the broadcast is over and when you're done cheering, because we have a lot of work to do. But then there's another side of it, Tony, too, where sports does play into what we're talking about right now. Like, for example, a big story today is that Pete Hegseth's Department of Defense, which is run in a manner that is entirely white supremacist, took down their page that was a tribute to U.S. Army veteran and Major League Baseball trailblazer Jackie Robinson. And that, and there's an article up now on ESPN about the erasure of Jackie Robinson from the U.S. military's website. Now, this is racist and white supremacist and disgusting. And it's difficult to not think of a famous quote from Jackie Robinson, which is, "If I had to choose between the Baseball Hall of Fame and full citizenship for my people, I would choose full citizenship." When they erase Jackie Robinson, it's not about DEI or woke or whatever nonsense they say. What it's about is renouncing the idea that if you are not white and connected, you actually are, your citizenship is effectively renounced. You are not part of this country's history. And that's the statement they're making. That's what they're trying to say. They are making racism great again, and they clearly have an audience for it.
Speaking of which, in terms of addressing our societal situation in relation to sports, today at 3 p.m. our time on the Real News Network, you're going to be having an NCAA March Madness show, but it's not necessarily going to be discussing the brackets and predictions. You'll be addressing the gambling addiction economy and the secret history of women's college basketball. Without giving up everything you'll be talking about later today, Can you give us a little preview of what you're going to be talking about? How big is the gambling economy, and what effect? Well, I'll ask that other second question later. So, how big is the gambling economy, and how has it grown since it's legal now?
Well, it's less about the legality, Tony, and more about these apps. Like, if gambling was legal in all 50 states, but you still had to go through the effort of going to a 21 and over casino where you have to show ID to get in, I mean, that would provide at least a semblance of regulation relative to what we're seeing right now. I mean, it's very easy for people under the age of 21, even under the age of 18, any age really, to be able to score an account for these apps. They make bets. People under 18, I mean, actually under 25, are scientifically proven to have more difficulties with impulse control relative to the development of the frontal lobe of the brain. So you're dealing with people who are wrestling with the development of their impulse control. And you're also dealing with people who, unless you're born rich, you don't have a lot of money before you're 21. And so what you're seeing is this addiction that is sucking away people's pocketbooks, but also sucking away people's time and people's energy. And the phone calls by youth that have gone to these addiction hotlines since the apps became prevalent are through the roof. Through the roof. I mean, Congress is about to, and you know, this Congress, obviously, half of it is just won over to fascism, and the other half ain't doing anything. But what they're doing actually coming together, it looks like, to do hearings about the corrosive effect of sports gambling, because it does constitute a mental health and even an economic crisis in this country right now. The thing that we can't depend on is the sports leagues to do anything about it, because there are no words, Tony, for the billions of dollars that have been pumped into the sports economy over the last 5 years. You see it reflected somewhat in much higher salaries. And I think those salaries also have a corrosive effect on the ability of athletes to risk their standing to be political in the current climate, for example. Mm-hmm. So the addiction economy has had a terrible effect on the politics of sports and a terrible effect on the lives of our young people, particularly young boys.
Speaking of athletes who are willing to stick their necks out, you write a lot about athletes who have done that and taken political stands. Most recently, you talked about the former punter for the Minnesota Vikings, Chris Cluey, spoke up at a public meeting and was arrested. That comes to mind. Is it easy for you to find outspoken progressive athletes?
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, one of the advantages, we've known each other a while, Tony, mm-hmm. and one of the advantages of longevity, I've been doing this 20 years, is being able to, you know, develop trust, develop networks of people. So even when there are very few political athletes, and what I have found over the years is that it is an ebb and flow type of situation, you still have these pipelines. So when Chris did what he did, I found out about it very soon thereafter. I got in touch with Chris. And Chris told me that he wasn't talking to the New York Times, but he talked to me. And at first I was very flattered. But then I asked him, well, why aren't you talking to the New York Times? And he said, well, look at how they covered Hitler in the early 30s. There are too many parallels between that and how they cover Trump now. I don't want to be a part of them.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, we got a guy with some history and some principles here. That's good.
Really? One of the other subjects you're going to be addressing later on today on your podcast is the secret history of women's college basketball.
Yeah. Oh, I should be clear that it's not a podcast.
Oh,
it's the Real News Network.
Okay.
And it's broadcast television, both on Free Speech TV and on their YouTube, and on their very popular YouTube page that has over 1 million subscribers, and their website. I just want to make sure.
Okay, great, great.
We get that right, because I'm very proud of the work they're doing. And I'm not just saying that to pump them up or puff them up. I'm actually trying to make an argument, Tony, that also applies to WORT, which is, it's so clear to me in this climate that we need to be building our independent institutions of media. Mm-hmm. That we are not getting our message through the cable broadcast networks. We're certainly not getting them through the mainstream media, places like the Washington Post, which Trump is now complimenting, because it's now their credibility has been destroyed. I guess Trump loves that by their owner, the execrable Jeff Bezos. So, you know, this is where we are right now. We got to build WORT. We got to build the Real News Network, and people should support both however they can.
All right. So I'll go back to that question then. Can you talk a little bit about the secret history of women's college basketball?
I apologize for that, Tony. You see, last year, and a lot of people maybe have forgotten this or don't know this, the women's Final Four got significantly higher ratings than the men's Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And that had never happened before.
Now, we could attribute that to Caitlin Clark's presence, right?
That is certainly a huge part of the story. But, you know, the Caitlin Clark phenomenon, she made it to the finals, lost to South Carolina. But it's also a little bit more complicated than that, because, you know, basketball is a 5-on-5 sport. So if you had this amazing Caitlin Clark and 9 people dribbling the ball off their feet, you wouldn't have much. Mm-hmm. So you also do have to look at the conditions, the soil that has been planted, that's allowed NCAA women's basketball to achieve such a high mark. Now, I don't think the ratings are going to be as high this year, but I really do think they may be higher than the men again, especially if a star player like USC's Juju Watkins makes it to the finals, because she's an imagination catcher for sure in the Caitlin Clark. I think they will actually, but we'll see what happens. I saw Juju play live here against Maryland. It was a sight to see. But one of the things I'm going to be talking about on the show is a lot of people give credit to that soil that I was just mentioning that has grown this incredible crop of basketball players to the NCAA. A recent article in the New York Times was about the NCAA's roots in creating this sport. But that is just a lie. Because the NCAA actually spent the 1970s into the early 80s suppressing women's basketball. The collegiate league that really built up players that we know of today, like Nancy Lieberman and Lynette Woodard and the great Lucia Harris, who was known as the Queen of the Court, these players played in a league called the AIAW. And I have on my show the foremost expert on the AIAW and its history in the United States. And she is such a great storyteller. Her name is Professor Diane Williams. And I really do look forward if folks tune in to learn about this hidden history of women's basketball. So it's so interesting to me, Tony, because you asked such a good question to start this interview about, you know, do we even have it in us to pay attention to sports right now, given all the hellish things that are happening in the world? And this issue of the gambling addiction economy and youth addiction, I mean, that affects, you know, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people regarding in families right now. And if you also look at, you know, the way women are being stepped on with this new administration, knowing this critical part of women's history and sports has always been a huge part of with the women's liberation movement, knowing this history is empowering, which is precisely why it's hidden at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're also the author at least 11 books, last I looked. One of your books, Game Over, How Politics Has Turned the Sports World Upside Down. It's about the corporate sports industry and its relationship with international struggles against injustice. Can you talk a little bit about the premise of that book?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm proud of that book, if for no other reason than it was before you had this wave of politics in sports that really started with the intersection of the Black Lives Matter movement and the sports world following the events in Ferguson after the police killing of Michael Brown. That was really the jump-off point for a real anti-police brutality fervor that thrummed through athletes, particularly Black athletes, throughout the sports world, probably symbolized most by, of course, Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, but also by people in the WNBA who were protesting during the anthem before Colin Kaepernick was. They were doing it that summer. So to take it a step back, like the book was really about what is happening right now that is making, to my mind, sports so ripe for some sort of political intervention. Like, what are the tensions? And, you know, so there are chapters on different issues, but that central one that you talk about, that tension that has to do with corporatization of play, you know, there's an inherent contradiction there of sports, which is supposed to be a game, as big business. The idea of a child's game being played by adults, the idea of them making tons of money, but careers only lasting 3 to 5 years, depending on the sport. The idea of so many athletes coming from poverty, disproportionately athletes of color, like, how does that work in this matrix, especially when getting jobs after playing is such a difficult task. So this is what the book is really looking at, and I'm proud of it. I mean, even if it's not as dynamic as perhaps a book written even just 2 years later, it is a book that I think really talks about a table that was set and predicted a meal that was eventually served.
One of the important roles sports plays in our society, a lot of people, especially political people, if you will, feel that it's it's a distraction, and that it's people spend too much time on it, and even people that are supposed to be political, such as myself, who, I'm a Packer fan, you know, I'm rooting on Wisconsin Badgers basketball this year. Is it bigger here in the United States than in other countries, or do sports play a big role in other societies?
A terrific question. A terrific question. I think what we need to do is, that's such a good question about that. Like, I think, yes, people do spend too much time on sports. I know I do. I mean, I think putting that on the table is correct. But I look at it, as I said before, a little bit, but let me just be very clear about this. This society drives us to look for escape because it is so savagely unequal, because it is so brutal. I mean, it's no wonder people flood to escape. I mean, it's no wonder people hate their jobs. I mean, it's our society, and now it's going to be no wonder people even hate politics, because it's going to be so dark, dank, and miserable, and fascistic. I mean, that's what we're looking at. And when politics are fascistic, what it limits is our ability to affect change, which is ideally what politics are supposed to be about. So if you can't affect change at all, or if even you're risking your livelihood or even your freedom or even your citizenship by trying to affect change, well, then that's going to be a heck of a damper on people trying to do that. I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm making no predictions in that regard, because, you know, we've also seen pretty nonstop protests where I live since this administration took power. We've seen huge protests around Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia student. They disappeared. So these protests are there. And so I'm not trying to predict what's going to happen, but it's just going to say, I see why people look to escape in sports. But I also see that, you know, I was a history major, and, you know, there's no way we can envision or talk about the early years of the civil rights movement without talking about the person the Department of Defense is trying to erase, Jackie Robinson. You know, we can't talk about the 1960s without talking about Muhammad Ali. We can't talk about the women's liberation movement without talking about Billie Jean King. These are realities. And we mentioned the Black Lives Matter movement and Colin Kaepernick. You know, athletes have played a role in the struggle. And I think knowing that history is so important, because so many people are involved in sports. It's important to let them know that sports has this history of struggle that has had huge reverberations and ramifications for the United States. To say that sports doesn't matter is another way of saying that Muhammad Ali doesn't matter. And if we're saying Muhammad Ali doesn't matter, what we're doing is voluntarily renouncing a history that is empowering, that has the capacity to connect with people, particularly young people, and we can't afford to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lately your writings have been addressing, I guess we could say, non-sports related subject matter.
Yeah.
Namely, the situation in the occupied territories, especially the genocide in Gaza. in the resistance in this country against that. Why is that important for you? One of the most recent columns I read had to do with the Jewish Voice for Peace takeover of the lobby of Trump Tower. And this is coming. Talk a little bit about that, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just, of course, about that, but it's about just how are people on earth, are people relying on an anti-Semitic administration when they say they're fighting anti-Semitism? Like, how is anybody taking that at face value? And this is one of those moments, like, yeah, I'm a sports writer, Tony, but I'm also a Jewish sports writer. And I think it's so important for Jewish people that see how full of crap and how pernicious this all is. We really have to be the ones to speak out, because they're saying they are doing this in our name. They are saying they are disappearing college students in our name. They are saying that they are like putting into receivership entire academic departments at Columbia in our name.
Mm-hmm.
That is unacceptable. And it's why I did highlight in the article that it wasn't just Jewish Voice for Peace, but the Jewish protesters, 100 of whom got arrested in the lobby of Trump Tower. That's really important right now that they involve themselves in that activity. And it's important because what it does is it pokes holes in the balloon. It shows that the emperor has no clothes. It's so vital because it takes away their critical argument, which is that they're doing it for us. Like in the article, I spoke about Harris Faulkner, who's one of the hideous anchors at Fox News, and she was sputtering in reporting on the protest. Absolutely. It was almost like a robot that was malfunctioning. And one of the things that she said was, they must really hate Jewish Americans. You see, lines like that fall completely flat if the images on the screen are of people getting arrested and they're wearing T-shirts that say, Jews for freedom and things like that, you know? So there's that contradiction between her message and then the people who are actually protesting, and that punctures her balloon, that punctures the balloon mm-hmm. of Fox News, punctures the balloon of this administration.
Let's hope so. As long as people can notice that or realize that these are Jewish protesters. Another one of your recent columns, speaking of people that are losing their clothes or no clothes, had to do with the timid and weak response of the opposition, if we can call the Democratic Party that. What about that? And I believe it might have even been before Chuck Schumer voted to approve the government stay and open on Friday.
I think you're being almost too kind to me. Here, Chuck Schumer, he's publishing a book about anti-Semitism while cutting a deal with an anti-Semitic administration. Like, how do you even begin to even comprehend something like that? I mean, it's so unbelievably disgusting. Can't do it anymore. Can't do it. I'm not with Chuck Schumer. I mean, this government needs to be treated like it has no legitimacy. And even the argument that Chuck Schumer was making on the face of it is so ineffably stupid, because, and it shows, frankly, complicity, because for him to say, well, I think we have to make this deal because otherwise they can have power to do whatever they want. It's like, they're already doing that. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm dealing with. All right. I'm sorry. Can't do it.
By the way, we're speaking with Dave Zirin. He is the sports editor for The Nation magazine. Now, everybody knows The Nation has been a leftist and a progressive publication for 100-something years or so. And you're the first sports editor. And,
that is true.
And they've put up with you because of your take on sports.
I appreciate that I got to tell you, though, like, I've been writing about Israel and things like that for almost my entire time there, sometimes through the lens of sports, you know, speaking about the struggles of Palestinian athletes, but also about sometimes, just like you said, straight up articles that have nothing to do with sports. And I got to tell you, like they've always had my back in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important to say.
All right.
A lot of times, you know, I just think we got to give people credit sometimes when they
right
when they help you in such a way.
Right, right. Now, where can where else can people see your writings or listen to you?
And yeah,
again, today at 3 o'clock, you're going to be on the Real News Network, which is actually it's not a podcast.
We got a YouTube page.
Yeah,
we got a YouTube page. We and then down the line, I'm not sure of the schedule. It's going to be on Free Speech TV. So people should check out the YouTube page of the Real News Network. People should subscribe to it. It's not just me; they do absolutely incredible stuff. And I hope people do check it out.
Mm-hmm. Now, I couldn't let you go, Dave. I filled out my bracket last night. I don't know if you got a bracket filled out for The Nation magazine has one on the wall for their staff or whatever.
They probably do in office. I wish I lived in New York. I could be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. What about your take? And also, how do you like the Wisconsin Badgers as far as how far you think they may go in this tournament?
Yeah, I think they could be pretty good. I mean, why not? I mean, that's what's one of the great things about the tournament is, you know, that there's always those Cinderella stories. But I think we also got to remember that those Cinderella stories, that's sometimes a false bill of goods, because while you always have these upsets in the first couple of rounds, it always does seem to be the best funded teams, the teams that can pay NIL money to the best players, mm-hmm. name, image, and likeness money. Those seem to be the teams that usually end up on top.
Is this not only NIL, but the open portal, is that really going to change the face of collegiate sports, not to mention high school sports now that they're going to be allowing that also? But is it going to change the landscape for college athletics?
Great question. It already has dramatically. Yes. You know, I used to, you know, and it's the Wild West out there in terms of how it's operating. It's had effects that are very strong, like players staying in college longer because it's an easier schedule and they're making good money and, you know, a big person on campus. Like, it's a better life. Or maybe they just don't like their draft position. And it used to be players left before they were ready and they were kids and teams had to figure out whether to take risks on them. Also, that the portal means you can just leave. I mean, you know, Tony, you know, when you and I were, you know, actually you and I mean, this is just about a few years ago. Like, you'd have to wait out a whole year before being able to play again. And that can be disastrous, absolutely disastrous. So, I mean, I find the whole thing to be a period of incredible change right now. That's what it also doesn't answer the most fundamental question, which is about unionization. And so players can have rights, all players, not just the superstars who can get NIL money.
Hmm. All right. Well, David, as always, I know you got to get going, but I really appreciate your writings, which I do follow. But it's also a pleasure to have you on Wart. You haven't been on in a while. And I want to thank you for being on WRT and also supporting independent news outlets. And,
always. I'm done with corporate media, man.
All right.
I mean, I used to be on it because I thought, like, I used to be ESPN a lot and CNN, MSNBC, because I thought bringing radical politics into these spaces had value. But I did that for years and years and years, and look where we are. Which
exactly.
It really has forced me to examine whether or not that actually does have value.
Well, do they call and you? Do they call you anymore or what?
Well, I mean, I wrote an article about I would never be on MSNBC again.
But I do remember seeing you on ESPN at times. I'm like, oh, wow, there's Zyron, man. He got a...
I don't know what to say, Tony. It's just, if I only have limited time, I'm going to invest that time in independent media and independent institutions. Even if there's a less of an audience, these are the institutions that we need to build if we're going to have any hope going forward. And like I said before, like if being in these more corporate spaces really, we wouldn't be staring down the barrel of fascism right now.
I guess so. And with that, I guess we'll conclude this interview. But Dave, again, thank you very much. Keep on keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on writing, and definitely we'll stay in touch. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. You're a real one. Thanks, my best, man, to you and your family.
All right, you too. Take care.
To the grave, and closer to the grave, and come the dawn. I woke up this morning, shackled and drawn, shackled and drawn, shackled and drawn. Pick up the rocks and carried on. We're trudging through the dark and world gone wrong. I woke up this morning, shackled and drawn. My shovel in the dirt, shovel in the dirt keeps the devil gone. I woke up this morning, shackled and wrong, shackled and wrong, shackled and wrong. Pick up the rocks and carry it on. It's a poor boy to do, but keep singing a song. I woke up this morning.
It's 8:41, and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin, your listener-sponsored community radio station. We are celebrating our 50th year anniversary this year with a bunch of stuff going on, so be part of that. And also, we did just have a recent pledge drive. If you would like to pledge your support to WORT, you missed it, but you can still do it. Just go online to WORTFM.org. And press the pledge button and give whatever you can to keep things going. Just like Dave Zirin said, we got to have independent news media. Well, Angela Garcia, Cruz, got that wrong again. Sorry about that. Angelina Cruz, I should know better, knowing your family and everything. Angelina Cruz is part of the freshman class of the Wisconsin State Assembly now. And she's representing the 62nd State Assembly District, which is Racine. She's a former teacher and currently and still the president of the Racine Teachers Union. And she's also a member now of the Education Committee here in the state of Wisconsin and also the new GOAT Committee. Angelina, good morning. And thank you for being on.
Of course.
All right.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about it. First of all, you're part of this freshman class. You were telling me the other day that there are how many new elected officials, how many new members of this freshman class at the state assembly?
Great question. So I can't speak to how many of my Republican colleagues are freshmen, but I do know that there's 24 new freshman Democrats. So quite a large class. And there's a total of 45 of us. There's 99 assembly people. So
yes. So we'll do the math.
Quite a few. Yes.
So about 54 and 45, 54 Republicans. But the Democrats have made some inroads, some, I guess you could say, big inroads from where it used to be. And of course, this is supposed to all address the whole issue of gerrymandering in the state of Wisconsin. That is setting up voting districts where there would always be a Republican majority. While we're challenging that, that has been challenged in the courts and thrown out by our state Supreme Court. Of course, we got an election coming up soon. However, you mentioned that while we might have kind of dealt with the whole issue of gerrymandered voting districts, in the state capitol, it appears that the committee assignments and the committees are still gerrymandered. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure thing. So I won't bore the listeners with the exact breakdowns of every committee, but we are Democrats, is who I mean by we, outnumbered on every committee by Republicans. So it's disproportionate. For example, on the Education Committee, there are, we have four Democrats that sit on the Education Committee, and there are, I believe, seven. Mm-hmm. Seven Republicans. So, and every committee has a similar structure to it. So, we know that the reality is that anything that we bring forward is not going to be possibly even considered by committee. Definitely won't likely make it out of committee. So, I think probably well evidenced by the bills that the Education Committee has considered so far. Republicans seem not to intend to do anything serious to address the concerns of Wisconsinites in this legislative session. So it will be an interesting, I guess, introduction to the Assembly for the new people like myself.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that the Republicans were trying to reverse, which they actually did reverse, or they're attempting to reverse, is the current superintendent and also current candidate for state superintendent, Jill Underlie. She made some changes to the school district report cards and the forward exam. Can you tell us a little bit what that's all about, and then what the Republicans are trying to do in terms of reversing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the broad overview that's important to note as it's related to the state report card and what the Department of Public Instruction, which is led by educators, I would like to note, has attempted to do with the state report card is to more closely align it with what is actually being taught in our classroom. So it's more closely aligned to classroom assessments. It's more closely aligned to instruction that's being delivered in classrooms. From my perspective, what the Republicans are doing with this bill and other bills is really playing to the upcoming election. As you said, the state superintendent race is, or you alluded to it, the state superintendent race is on the ballot this spring. And so I think that they are just trying to whip up sort of cultural war frenzy and turn out a misinformed base to vote for someone who is very factually entrenched in the privatization movement. So Jill Underlie is a pro-public education candidate. She proposed a budget that supports the needs of students and educators who are supporting students every day in classrooms. And this is just part of a broader agenda to privatize our public schools and line the pockets of moneyed people. So,
How is this all going to play out? All states in this country now that Trump yesterday ordered the Secretary of Education, McMahon, to start to dismantle the federal government's Department of Education.
Yeah, I think that remains to be seen. The Department of Education really is critical in supporting a number of programs, including Title I, including IDEA, which is it's the federal law that protects students with individualized education programs or special education students. It's really important in terms of protecting the civil rights of students and public school students. So along with funding, we have like sort of this existential threat around kids really being targeted and not protected. So I obviously that's going to have implications at state to state, but we just really don't know what's going to happen at the federal level yet. We know that there's like this frenzied money grab happening by Elon Musk and Donald Trump. So it should be more clear, I guess, as we move forward. But it's just sort of really, I don't even know, like schizophrenic in terms of the violent swings and like what is happening. And then it's reversed and then it's brought to court because much of what they are doing is illegal. So we'll just have to see, pay very close attention and be responsive as citizens of this state and as of this country in defense of, I'm a public school educator in defense of my students and their families. So
now, how are you able to juggle both jobs? Now, you're also an assembly person now for the state of Wisconsin, and you're also the president of the Racine Teachers Union. How are you able to handle both responsibilities?
That is a great question. I keep reminding people I'm very new to this. We were sworn in on January 6th, so it's been a lot of sort of navigating what this new job is at the state capitol and sort of marrying that with my responsibilities as a local labor leader. So I'm still working on it. I think just figuring out how to work with both my teams. I really rely on some really great people both here and back at home, and figuring out like what this new landscape is exactly. So you'll have to have me back so I can give you a more meaningful answer on how I figured out how to do all of this.
And we'll talk to you in a year from now. We'll see how it's going. So, not to be outdone by Elon Musk, the assembly leader Robin Voss has set up his own Doge type of agency, if you will, or committee. It's called the GOAT Committee, and you are on that committee. Tell us about GOAT, and I forgot what GOAT stands for again.
Yeah, it stands for Government Operations Accountability and Transparency. So it's an interesting thing insofar that we've only met once for a hearing about remote work. It is unclear to me what the charge of the committee is to date. One of my Republican colleagues on the committee exercised the power of a state statute in order to direct local municipalities to provide information regarding DEI initiatives. Not quite sure what that is really about. It was shared with us at the first informational hearing formally. Unfortunately, as a committee member, I found out from our local municipalities and the media before I found out from
Your own committee,
my colleague on the committee. Yeah.
Wow.
It's unclear.
I listened to an interview about it with your colleague Francesca Hung, who's represents the Madison area too, and of course Republicans are like, well, this is what the public is demanding. Kind of using the same language that Musk and Trump are in terms of excuses for cutting all these governmental programs, that everybody wants accountability and transparency, something that state Republicans here in Wisconsin are not known for in terms of transparency. So it's not really clear what this GOAT committee is actually a charge to do, I guess. And I guess we'll have to wait and see. What are some of the other things that you hope to do in your first year here as a state assembly person?
I mean, I think in the absence of our ability to actually get any legislation, any serious legislation to the floor, I think I really want to prioritize connecting with constituents in my district and hearing about directly from people what is important to them, what is it actually that they are demanding. I think there's a lot of evidence, like going into office, I ran on public education. I made that no mystery. Racine Unified School District is going to referendum this spring for the second time in 5 years. It's an operating referendum this time, but I think issues like public education, issues just bread and butter issues, people having access to housing, access to healthcare. Wisconsinites, I think, just want to be able to get a job, pay their bills, support their kids, live meaningful lives with dignity. And so I think those are the stories I want to create space for in the legislature and elevate in the legislature. And so hopefully someday we can get to the point in which we are doing the work that actually reflects the will of the people in Wisconsin and reflects the values that Wisconsinites, carry into society. So that's my hope and what I'm going to be diligently working on. Because being in floor session and just like, it's a lot of, for example, today we are, the education committee on party line votes is bringing forward for consideration on the floor bills related to attacks on the transgender community. This is not something that the people of Wisconsin have asked for. Mm-hmm. I think with a record number of referendum over the last several years, I mean, I believe there's upwards of 80 referendum on April's ballot. Like, people want to talk about public education. People want to talk about supporting kids. People aren't asking for bills that discriminate classes of underrepresented people. That is just not rooted in reality. And it's really, I'm very disappointed to have to sit and debate mm-hmm. and listen to just hateful rhetoric in the people's house. But that's why it just strengthens my resolve to go back to my district and talk to people and elevate their stories. So that's what I intend to do.
Sounds good to me. Angelina Cruz, I want to thank you very much for being on the show this morning. Again, she's representing the 62nd State Assembly District, which covers Racine, a place near and dear to my heart. Angelina, good luck. We'll continue to follow your journey here. And thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. It's 8:57. How about this, everybody?
But I did warn you. Now you see fire burning in my eye. You smell badness on my breath. You feel violence bursting out of me. Look out.
It's 8:59, everybody. I want to thank you for tuning in to the Thursday Buzz. You're listening to Linton Kwesi Johnson, Forces of Victory. Time come, soon come, everybody. Let's all be ready. I want to thank Dave Zirin. Listen to his show today on the Real News Network at 3 o'clock today. And also, State Representative Angelina Cruz. I like her energy. She's got it. That's what we need. We need the youth to take over. I want to thank Mary Lou on phones, Peg and Mike Cullen for getting us on the internet. Eli couldn't be here, but he'll be back next week. Also, thank you, Charlie Pittman. Stay tuned for a very special edition of Hejira with my good friend and brother, Arnold Gonzalez hosting. It's coming up in just 1 minute. This is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, March 20th.
This is Bird Note. We often hear it said that spring bursts forth as if winter's leafless trees suddenly shimmer with green. Flowers pop. Birds start singing with all their hearts. But this seasonal change isn't instantaneous. It's a series of waves, slowly breaking waves that sweep up from the south to the north, right over the continent. Early spring migrants like robins and bluebirds return north in March, some even in February. Across the whole of April, week after week, new songbird migrants work north from the tropics, adding bit by